I hope you'll agree that what we've had this afternoon is four very, very interesting and stimulating talks, and they've taken us in what may seem at different directions at times. But what we've been exploring here is this sort of notion of health and thinking about health and how we think about it. So we've had one area which we might think that it all boils down to a bodily sort of process of the physiology of it, and then we might think about how the mental and the bodily actions sort of interact with each other, and maybe it's part of something going on mentally that's influencing the body as well as coming the other way round again. Then we've got to think about the sort of whole ethical aspects of how we handle people who have got various conditions, and particularly thinking about conditions that we might describe as mental when we're thinking about dementia, and what does that mean? How does that affect the way in which we're treating and caring for these people? Do certain things not apply when we're dealing with people who've got these mental conditions that would apply to people who we would think haven't got mental problems? So that might give us a bit of a conundrum sort of there. And then we've got to think about the whole sort of moral sphere in a different sense, about the social sort of aspect of it, and also the idea of some sort of spiritual aspect coming into it as well. So we can see that health is touching on numerous different domains, and included in that is also the legal framework as well. I know some people were saying, you know, how does this apply in terms of moral responsibility and legal responsibilities? So I hope you'll see that we've opened up a whole sort of set of different questions, and also looking at what these words mean. Does health have any meaning? Does mind have any meaning? Does identity have any meaning? So, if I hope you've had a bit of time now to put your thoughts together, and if I can ask you then if you've got any questions, please put your hands up. Right, Bob, as you put your hand up first. Yeah.
My question is actually for the first talk. I mean, it's related to that. I was a bit worried about the notion of the definition of health. I mean, we've probably got beyond the stage of thinking that because there's a word, there must be something which the word refers to, as if it's a physical object. And you treated, I think you were drawing a comparison between health and Wittgenstein's beetle in a box, like pain. Now, I would have thought the word health is simply a word in the English language, and you know what it means if you can use the word sensibly in conversation without people misunderstanding you. There's a special problem with the word pain in that it's a private sensation, and so when we're all talking about pains, we could be talking about different things. I think that was what Wittgenstein might have been saying, although who knows. Whereas with the word health, it seems to be absolutely straightforward, as long as everybody can use the word and mean the same thing. The difficulties come is when people don't use the word to mean the same thing, which of course is partly what people are talking about. So I just wonder if this substantive substance thing really matters very much.
It probably doesn't. The point that I was trying to... I used the beetle in the box to as a little trick. So health as a word, I'm trying to say, I am certain, itself, in a philosophical sense only, not in an ordinary general conversation. So like in a doctor's surgery, you could actually talk about health, because it's a very useful word to use if you wanted to do that. But if you were going to define, philosophically define, strictly define, no compromises, no qualifications, no if, buts, and ands, no it could be this, it could be that, we all agree it might be that, I think you're left with an empty answer. Because the word itself is just something which, as I suggest, Old English, back to old German, that the words are Heil and health. It looks the same as the present word, but then the dictionary says it meant whole, whole, the body is whole. Help, my body is healthy, my body is whole. Now we move on to soundness. What is soundness? Here again, we're going to essences, senses, implications, but it's actually nothing other than our impressions. So the word itself, I think, if you're going to use it in a philosophy, I think one has to start by actually define, if one can. I don't think you can, actually. I think it's just a word that is very useful. But I don't think it actually has a positive definition. I have associated it with physiology, but I deliberately use the word model, because a model is, like I use the word theory, an interpretation, like Einstein's theory of relativity, are interpretations of what might be the case. They are, as it were, models of reality. But they do work very well for prediction, but they're not actually a thing in itself. It's a bit like Kant, really. Well, I said enough.
Yes, it's interesting that you make a distinction between what a word means and how, and defining it philosophically.
Yes.
Which is
one
I would.
Yes.
I could argue about for hours, but
That's right.
Thank you. I enjoyed Brendan's talk also, and the word I picked out was wholeness. And I think there's a lot of interesting things around that. And I just think I drew a comparison with Alex's talk about DID and the fact that you've got more than one person. And clearly, if there is more than one person in one's head, that will compromise another concept that came out of Brendan's talk, which was the ability to maintain one's oneself and to keep alive. And if you've got two competing persons in there, I can imagine that would damage one's health. I also pulled out the concept from Judith's talk about the relationship between the mental and the physical. Now, the idea that, the thing that reminded me of was the split brains experiments. I don't know whether you've heard of them, Alex, where there's actual evidence that if you split the brain into two, you actually get two independent minds. Two sort of centres of consciousness which can actually compete with each other, and there are examples, there are videos you can find on YouTube where the right brain is controlling the left hand and the left brain is controlling the right hand, and they're actually competing for what they take off the shelves in the supermarket, for example. And I just wondered if there was any evidence at all whether Edith and Mary in that sort of example could actually relate to two different physical parts of the brain, and if so, whether, you know, for example through fMRI imaging and so on, and if so, would any of the panel actually think there's a fundamental problem with the notion that there could be two selves, two persons within the same body?
There is, I'm not familiar with any kind of neuroscientific evidence that there is a specific part of the brain or any specific connectivity between parts of the brains that gives rise to Edith, for instance. I do not think that it's that simple, at least not to my knowledge. But you're raising a very interesting question about what's the problem with the fact that there are two? Is it the fact that there are two, or is it something else? And I do not really... Well, this is my personal stance. I do not really think that the problem is multiplicity, if you will. But the problem is that Mary loses consciousness when Edith is there. And this has implications with Mary's life when she's not there, conscious. Because Edith might commit a murder, because she might spend a lot of money, I don't know why. So maybe the problem is the loss of consciousness and not the fact that there are two inside of her head.
Right.
And I do this because I do not really think that because when I say that it's inside her head, I make a, I think, a metaphysical commitment to where identity is, which is inside the head, which I don't believe, or at least which I do not want to make. So
if Edith is a bit more responsible in her behaviour,
maybe then it would be not a problem. True, wouldn't it? I mean, if they had two husbands and they would know when they would love each other, and maybe in that sense they would be healthy, and society wouldn't consider them a disease. Well, DID wouldn't be considered as a disease. And actually, there are many people. 25% of the population is a huge number. His voices, for instance, but not all of them. Yes, but not all of them are mentally ill. So there is a certain relativism to what is illness, at least in mental health, concerning that. And even in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, there is always one criterion, which is the person or its family or somebody else at least must be worried. I don't remember how they say it. Must be worried about the functionality of that person. And so there were a lot of discussions about Trump, for instance, and Trump, and is he a narcissist or not? And one of the people who wrote the part of narcissism in the DSM-5 wrote an article and said, if Donald Trump doesn't come to a psychiatrist to complain about the very symptom that he has, he's not mentally ill.
What if his wife does?
Then it will change the situation. Or maybe if the whole nation does.
I think one should quickly add, for sake of balance, that it is standard training, a learning for psychiatric trainees in Oxford anyway. It used to be 30 years ago, some of my colleagues were there, that Adolf Hitler was not actually mentally ill. And this was always the starting point of the discussion. The point is made is that we dislike what people do, bizarre behaviour, sometimes. We don't like what they do, and then we say they are exceptional. And then we go on to say they must be mentally ill. I'm not saying this is the answer. I'm just saying this is a philosophical idea. That they must be mentally ill, and therefore they must be morally less responsible than anybody else. So just for the sake of balance to President Trump, not that he's my favourite person, I know that, but just for the sake of Alex, I'm sure you'll appreciate the...
Definitely. Can I just come back on that? On that basis, you're going to have to say Stephen Hawking is mentally unwell, because he is on the extreme of the opposite extreme.
Well, when it is said he must be. Why is it he must be? What the word must? He must be. Why not is he could be, or he might be, or he isn't.
But what should anyone think?
You're going to say he must be ill.
If I understand your argument, you're saying anybody that isn't what I would call an outlier on some sort of spectrum must, in some sense, be declared mentally unwell, because the majority of us that are normal exist within the centre quartiles.
That is the social constructivist idea. That is exactly it. You have it said, isn't it?
I am not suggesting I believe that.
But
I think that's the logical outcome of your argument.
That is the argument that he's put up. I don't think it was quite what I intended to say. but if you ask me a question like, is a psychopath, let's take a nasty person, like Ian Brady, nice colourful character. Is he less responsible for what he did than, say, any other person who is within the normal range? What is the answer to that? Please.
I'm just going to make a point. I really don't want to be drawn on it.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to examine whether that is an appropriate question to ask anyway.
Okay.
Fair enough. Yes.
Is he more or less responsible? I suppose what I'm trying to say is, where does the answer to that question go?
Where
it may be that the question is, for what purpose do we want to analyse this man and either punish him or punish him more severely or less severely?
To what extent do we want? So, I mean, are you asking me to make some observation? No, I mean, yes. I mean, he was just an abstract. He's not an abstract. He's a real person. He was. But,
yes.
But he serves to give as an example of a psychopath.
Yeah.
Now, let's make it even easier. Let's take a pedophile. We all understand what that word is intended to imply. It means someone who has an overwhelming urge to interfere sexually. Abuse, if you like to use the word, with people who are minors, even if 20 months. Is that person morally responsible for what they do? And I will give you the words that have been passed on. If God made little boys so beautiful, what is wrong with me?
You know, perhaps I'll shut up after this.
No, again, yeah,
you said, is this man, the paedophile, morally responsible?
Question.
And the question is, where does that get you and for what purpose? I'm saying you could perhaps bypass the question of responsibility, and you could go directly to say, this man has got these conditions, he's committed these acts, what do we want to do with him?
Yeah. What conditions has he got?
Well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, okay.
Will you grant me that he has got a medical condition?
Oh, no, hang on a second. Hang on a second. Ooh, that's a rush. Let's just say that this person is a variety of human being.
Okay.
Let's just leave that, just a variety. Well, the normal, the range. I'm not hogging the whole thing now. I do this very well. Please shut me up. So, this paedophile, psychopathic paedophile, arguably is within a range of being a human being. Right? That body, let's just use that word. Let's not use the word person. Let's use that body. So the whole range of human bodies does something that we all disagree, we all agree is not acceptable. Okay. If it can be argued that that person actually did it. Yes, it's confirmed. Yes, we saw. Yes, the evidence is fine. No doubt about it. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to interpret this moral question, this situation? Does it have to be a moral question? We're on the same wavelength. I know. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You can just say that this person did it, therefore their action is they did it. The judgment is they did it. Of whether they so guilty or not guilty has been answered.
But
the next question is
what does society want to do with it?
Bingo! You have it. So ABC makes up what we decide to do. It's a choice by what we do. We make it up. There is no answer out there. There is no reality which says that body ought to be that, this, that, and other thing should happen to
them.
It's our choice. It's our choice. And if you want to go down the road of eugenics and all that, we're in terrible territory. I wouldn't dare to go down there. But we think of that. I can see that.
What I would just like to say is what we find acceptable changes to homosexuality used to be commonplace in Greece, in history. Still is. never been frowned on, you know. And only just are we coming out of the stage where it's acceptable now in this country. Likewise, female genital mutilation is acceptable in some societies. You know, we put our own labels on what people do, and we decide whether they're mentally sick or whether they're cruel or whether they're psychopaths, we decide. We put the limits.
So if everyone believed that female genital mutilation was okay, it would be okay?
If everybody believed that, what evidence do we have to the contrary?
So if everyone believed that the earth was flat, does that make the earth flat?
We're not talking about truths. We're talking...
Oh, so there aren't any moral truths?
Are there?
Oh, really? I think that even if everybody believed that female genital mutilation... I mean, there was a time when everyone believed that the human sacrifice was okay. I don't think it was okay.
But Mary, your point is valid as an argument against what's just been said.
Well, that's why...
But likewise, it's not a knockdown argument for the truth of moral statements.
One point was put, and I was putting the opposite point because it seems to be that we mustn't go down the road of consensus.
I agree with you, but it's not a universal knockdown argument for moral values or moral truths.
No, I paid everyone to think that I was saying that I am right, except in the sense of this. If Judith was putting forward a point, and I was putting forward another point. So Judith said P and I said not P.
It's philosophy.
No, it's right. Philosophy, exactly. That's what we're...
It's philosophy.
I know this is blindingly obvious. Just because everyone believes something doesn't make it true. That's a separate issue whether there are such things as objective moral truths. But, the point about truths, I think, has to be taken. And truth and belief, universal belief is not equal to truth.
No. Mm.
And here we have sort of some abstract concepts that we're dealing with, and we're trying to sort of look at the concrete examples which maybe come in when we're talking about health in some way, or we think of it in that holistic sort of way in which Brendan is sort of suggesting. Alan, you had a question.
Thank you. I'd like to get back to the points that Alex was making, which weren't about morals, because... It does seem to me that he was overworking the Emily and Mary identity issue as showing there were two people there, when if one of them had thought they were a teapot. It's a straightforward issue of psychosis, it seems to me. There is this poor lady who thinks at one point she's one person, at another point she's another person. And suppresses the memory of the one person, but then her mind's all over the place. It's as bad as that. Anyway, that's my question. Is it not as bad as that? But the main point I wanted to make was linking with Marianne's discussion of late Alzheimer's, where people say, is it still the same person? Exchange with Colin, which is a very difficult one, I think. And your discussion of that was very interesting. And the reductionist bit about Hume and Dennett saying it's all a matter of brain function seems to me. But where the person concerned has lost faculties of perceiving and communicating to that extent. It is, I suppose, a matter of intuition, of faith without much evidence, that it is still the same person. But the definition of person is still the same in that, contrary to Hume, Dennett, you say I is an illusion and just a way of ordering perceptions. It is a way of ordering perceptions, but that's the nature of the personal identity that we're talking about. It's a matter of ordering perceptions and memories and actions, I'm inclined to say, though that's difficult, more complicated, or difficult to argue. And if the personal identity is this structural concept, it does make it easier to see how we infer, just as we infer that somebody else sees and thinks in the same general kind of way as I do, that we infer that something is still going on. And it is then a matter of physical continuity, but only to justify the inference. It's not part of the definition.
Could I ask a question? Okay. This is right in on top of that. Does someone if someone with dementia who is still able to walk, talk, get about, kills somebody?
Sorry?
It kills somebody. Murder. Death. Does death. Is it the identity of the person? Is the identity of the person who does the killing the same as the identity of the person who had been previously?
Who had been
previously. You were asking about identity.
Yeah, I was, but yeah. I don't understand.
So the person with dementia loses
the person is
the person with dementia.
Yeah.
Loses some of themselves.
Yeah.
There's some loss.
Yeah.
If we had to answer the question, is that person's identity that person who was killed the same as the person 10 years earlier?
I think on my approach, and I don't see why not, you would have to say that it was the same person.
Right.
Well, I can no longer hold them morally responsible because they've lost their necessary faculties.
Right.
But they're two different questions. Or responsibility the same person or not.
Yeah.
And again, you might take two different approaches, the reductionist approach, by which you will define a sufficient and necessary condition of personhood, or take the Cartesian, Kantian approach and say, yes, it is the same person, sorry, because it has the same soul, for instance. So you might...
Yep.
You will have to make an ontological commitment to something in order to answer the question, I think.
Yeah.
Can I just come back to something that Alan expressed there? In your first part of the question, Alan, you were talking about the DID victim being wrong to think that she is different people.
I think I said that we shouldn't see her as two different people, really, rather than that. I mean, I think she was totally from then, but and no doubt at one time she was convinced she was one person, at one time she was convinced she was another.
Despite the softening of what you said, I would take exception that a person with DID, a person may well have a problem where they think they have multiple personalities and they don't. That can happen, and there can be various degrees of severity of DID where the identity or the different identities are merged more or less and not quite so separate as in other cases. But I think it would be quite wrong for us to suppose that someone can't possibly have different personalities, that they must have some mistake in thinking so. Because although the criteria for identifying is this a different personality or not, vague and unfamiliar to us, there's still plenty of people with DID. So it's quite justifiable for them to say, yes, these are different personalities. I don't have control over this one. I don't have remember this.
You're using personalities, and I'm not sure what I was committed to saying that. But I was saying, are they two different people?
Well, again, the lack of the definition of what it means to be a sane person means that we have to recognise that there's a continuum there. And in some senses, they may be the same person, they're in the same body. And in another sense, they may be completely different people, they have different memories, or they might have similar memories, different personalities, and so on. So, because there's no tight definition of what it means to be the same person, but there are general family resemblances for that definition, it's quite right for someone to say, yes, I am different people sometimes, to some extent, and they may be describing the situation perfectly accurately.
I mean, I understand that view. I just think that this is such an extreme case. It's a bit like Putnam Water and H2O. If it happened, we would have to decide, and for what purpose is the point, whether we wanted to count one person behaving in two totally different ways, or and seeing it themselves as different people, or two different people who are in the same body and have a temporal continuity.
These thoughts are very extreme.
When we say, for instance, two people are in the same body, we make an ontological commitment saying that, for instance, personhood is in the brain, which is in the body. But somebody might say, no, you must take a more holistic approach and saying that a person is the whole body in the environment, mm-hmm. in a specific context, for instance. In that case, you might say that she's not two people, but she's one person who changes according to context, I don't know. Because she does switch in moments of high stress, for instance. She was talking about the baby, and the voices, well, the crying that she hears, and in that moment she changes. I think that you need to be aware of where you position personhood. And when you say inside the body, you de facto make a commitment.
I do agree. Perhaps I was going too far to say she was just wrong in thinking that she was one person and she was another. But how you categorize it as two people or one person is a matter of choice, and really it's a question of separating out the factors which make one say one thing and the factors which make one say the other.
I'd just like to ask a question here, because I find DID fascinating. Mm-hmm. From what you said there, that was such a short excerpt, Edith knew about Mary, but Mary didn't know about Edith. Is that correct?
She didn't know.
They both knew about each other. Yeah, so, yeah. And would Mary have seen Edith as herself? No, she saw her as a...
I do not know. No. I wouldn't be able to answer the question. I don't know. Does it depend on the person? Because, some people accept their condition in a different way, mm-hmm. and others don't, so maybe some people would be they wouldn't accept the fact that there's somebody or that there's something going on there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know that.
I just wonder if you started with the healthy mind, the healthy person, and if you examine yourselves, you know there are different dimensions to yourself. Let's take a very simple example, the analysis behind transactional analysis identifies parent, adult, child, and we can all recognise all three of those in each of us. The problem when you get to mental health is something gets blocked, something gets pushed aside, something gets suppressed. It's not that they're changing in the sense of that they always were a number of people, we're all a number of people. I've been shaped by society, shaped by our parents, shaped by people we interact with at work. All these dimensions of ourselves. It's just when somebody's ill, some of these things get knocked off, or the memory can't remember. That's the proper way to use it.
Or do they get knocked off, or do they get exaggerated?
Because exaggerated, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can ask why that particular thing is exaggerated.
I'm reminded of Walt Whitman saying, I'm large, I contain multitudes. But we're talking just about Mary. There are other people in her story. There are her family. There are the people who've known this body from the beginning. And they'll tell you who it is. When we're trying to identify this body with something speaking in it, the family, who do they say it is when it's speaking? Is it Mary? Or is it who's Edith? Was Edith someone in the family?
I don't know that.
It wasn't one of your case histories.
No. This was a. Right. Urban was one of my cases.
A lot of this could be made clearer by external inputs.
I think it's interesting that you're saying, because we tend to think like that, I think. A body with something speaking inside of it, Again, I think it's an ontological commitment that we're making, saying that The body that we see is not part of the person, it's something inside of the body that is the person. I'm not saying that I'm against that, but I think that we really must be aware that we're making this commitment there.
I wasn't separating the body and the brain and the person, I was saying this entity.
Right.
I wasn't saying...
So you consider her to be unified?
Yes.
Edith and Mary together unified as one
person? I do.
Right.
Yeah. I would have noticed because there's one body there.
Well, that helps if there's only
two bodies.
It's a thought experiment.
You know, in some thought experiments... Oh, sorry.
Go on.
In some thought experiments, especially in Western philosophy, you take half of the brain of one person... Well, no, you half of the brain... you keep one half of the brain in the body, and the other half of the brain, you put it in another body. And the question is, you have two Alexes, for instance, or not. But again, you know, we think that the brain is the center of personhood. So if I take half of my brain and...
The whole brain is easier.
The whole brain... Oh, right, the whole brain too. Right.
The famous one's Prince and the Watchmaker, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
You would be a different person because you are not just your brain. You are your brain and
body.
And your body, and like your liver or your kidney. Right. Or
I was discussing before with somebody, and I was saying, for instance, when I speak with my Greek friends, I'm a different person, I have a different sense of humour, and with my German friends, I'm completely different. You know, the things that I say, the way I say things are different, but I'm still me in both contexts.
Because so you're embodied.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I think that, you know, and the context, the environment in which I am, is also part of me, isn't it?
Yeah.
It affects us.
Yeah. That's right.
And I completely agree that your body, I mean, the memory thing, it's interesting because Locke says, if I had all your memories, I would be you. Mm-hmm. Can I use Alex for this, actually, for reasons that will become obvious? If I had all Alex's memories, I would, when I look in, sorry, hang on a second. Yes, if suddenly I took on all Alex's memories, when I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm going to get a hell of a shock. Because the body is part of me.
Absolutely.
Because of course, a lot of my memory, and when I reach out for my water beside my bed at night, I know exactly where to reach to. But if I were a lot taller or a lot shorter, I would miss.
And your senses
so
would be different.
So there are an awful lot of my... body man, but I still think that if you have DII, DID, I don't think that your family would be able to solve this problem because, of course, there's one body, and whoever's given birth to you is going to say that's Mary.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I called her. Mm. But the fact is, if Mary were to start talking as Edith, I think even her own mother would say
something's wrong here.
Yeah. You know, and it would be very difficult not to describe it as she seems to have two personalities. Mm. So I don't know if the family would be able to solve the problem.
Well, they could confirm a few things. They could confirm a few things, whether Mary is hiding from Edith for some deep psychological reason, and that would explain the splitting.
Somebody might say that, well, because there is Mary, the name that was given to that body person, and then you have somebody talking and saying that she has a baby, and somebody else saying that she's going to kill somebody. You might say that they are two, I don't know how to call them, persons, which are part of Mary. So the one talking in the beginning isn't really Mary. It's somebody, and together with Edith, they make Mary. Yeah. Somebody could
that's
do that,
a good way of explaining
it. Yeah. And actually the therapy consists in doing that, in merging the two together.
Well, that's what Hacking's saying, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, exactly.
And you didn't give the reference for Hacking.
I didn't. It's actually in one of the references. Yeah. But I realised I was saying that. Yeah.
No, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can I suggest some perhaps a quite simple move that might help part of the... problem about Mary and Edith, and that's to distinguish between moral and legal responsibility, because I think here in this case of Edith killing someone without Mary knowing it, there's actually a very simple answer, certainly in English law. First of all, we take a very pragmatic notion of identity. So it would be Mary who'd be in the dock. And then there's a question of whether she, at the time of killing the person, she was aware of the nature and consequences of her acts. So actually, I think the legal answer to that question is actually very simple and not very interesting. But it perhaps disentangles it a bit. Because, I mean, I think the real question is the moral question of this difficult question of identity and accountability.
But this is where John's solution comes in, because there's only one person we can put in prison. And whether we choose to put her in a psychiatric hospital or a prison, either way, we get her off the street, whoever she is.
Can I just ask one question about it?
Helga, you had a question, I think.
Coming back to that conundrum, because you made a very good point that there's obviously the Greek bit of you, there's the German bit of you, and you know, we all have different personalities, and one bit gets expressed under certain circumstances. Do you know whether this woman is like that? So when she's Mary, is she aware? Is she, because if you were in Greece and your German friends came along, you would immediately recognise them, and you would be the German Alex. Would she be the same way? So at every point, she is both and is conscious of being both and could switch.
It's not happening in a conscious way. So Mary, when Edith is there, she's not there. Right?
So
it's not really the same thing, because I may even consciously choose to talk in a different way, which is not the case in this disorder. DID, they lose consciousness, and the other person is there. I'm sorry, your question was?
So the question is whether, like you are aware of the different parts of the person, they're both there and you're fully conscious of them. Is that the same with this person? Or is it really when she's Mary, she's only Mary and she has no recollection? Because there was something said earlier which suggests that actually she is aware.
She may be aware that there's somebody existing. Well, again, when I'm saying somebody, I mean something's happening, and that she loses consciousness, and people might tell her, well, you were somebody else before. So she might be conscious about it. She might know that. But she will never, at the same time, exist with Edith. Or at least she will never be conscious at the same time with Edith. They will never speak at the same time. They will never have the same memory. Right?
Yes, I'm Chris again. So I may very briefly share my personal experience, which I think will be philosophically relevant, and that's of working with DID people and having elements of DID myself, which I think we all do. And basically, if you just get it in your head that every possible combination of circumstances that the human mind can invent will be there in one DID person or another. So there are some DID people where they are co-present. In other words, when they switch, they know they've switched. The other people that aren't at the front know who's at the front, and they can sense it. And there are other people, sometimes they won't be co-present. There are some people where one personality or identity knows about the others, but not about all of them. And this A may know about B, C, and D. C may know about B and E, but not A. And so any combination that you can imagine will be there in one person or another, because it's an invention of the human mind. And if you can imagine it, then it will have happened. And in terms of moral culpability, it's not just a matter of whether the person who's not in control knows what's happening. They may simply know what's going in happening, but not be in control. Or they may be, as Brendan, as Alice has described, be completely ignorant. Now that's one moral situation where you're ignorant of what your other author is doing. Another moral situation is where you know perfectly well what you're doing, but you're incapable of stopping them. So just take that stance. Imagine whatever you like, and that can happen. And I think that is interesting philosophically, because it does mean we've got to be much less definite about what we're going to do
in a certain situation, as Brendan has pointed out, mm. we've got to stop having words like responsibility and thinking that we know what they actually mean.
Mm. Well, we do know what it means, but we can't apply it.
I disagree there. I think we have a word like responsibility. When we get to the boundaries of it, we don't actually know what it means. Like Wittgenstein says, you know, it's a game. We've got a very complicated word, and it doesn't quite fit.
Well, I'm afraid we've now got to close our discussion.